Welcome to Truth Transistor Radio.
This is the most awesomest podcast of all time. I'm your host, Rob Hendrick. This podcast is brought to you by Proverbs 16:18. Pride goeth before destruction.
Truth Transistors, welcome to another episode. I don't know what number this is, but today I'm talking to my friend Mike.
Yo, yo.
And we met via cool Canary Cry podcast. And there was a message board there. And I think the first time I saw him was on a Zoom message, a group Zoom thing through that. And that was the first time I saw you and your future wife at the time. And now you're married to her. So I think both of you all were on that Zoom call.
Yeah, she kind of joined a little bit later. But yeah, that's kind of how we met. We mostly just talked on the forum until the Zoom call stuff actually started. So
Through,
I don't know. I was vaguely familiar with you.
Oh yeah. Through my name.
Yeah, just the truth. Yeah, in fact, I remember seeing on Zoom, you know, you had your Truth Transistor name on there. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I would have done Truth Transistor Radio, but I think that was too long or something. I wasn't able to use the full.
Oh, you know what? No, that's right. You had to introduce yourself and give your screen name. In fact, everybody kind of had to do that because everybody's screen names don't really fit.
Right. Yeah, and then yours was Cool Runnin's Mon,
yep.
Which I didn't understand what that was, and then I was thinking about that on the way here, and I realized, oh wait, there's that Jamaican bobsled movie.
Yeah, that's totally what it was about.
I was trying to think of what conspiracy type connection there was, but I guess that makes sense. Not everybody has a tie into this stuff, but
well, what's funny is, yeah, that movie actually we watched it again recently. That movie doesn't even really have an agenda. There's no woke stuff at all. Yeah. You know, it's Disney. It's classic Disney.
Yeah. Well, back in my childhood, I remember most movies were woke free or just basic. It seems like later Disney started adding a bunch of stuff, but.
Yeah, having agendas. It's funny because it's a triumphant story about, unlikely victors, right? Like people with just determination.
Right.
And they go from Jamaica to the Canadian Albertan Winter Olympics, you know.
Yeah.
Due to a bobsled team. It just so happens this guy that gets drunk there in Jamaica, he actually happened to have been, you know, this pro bobsled guy, and then they basically he gets he cheated, and so he was like, I really wish I hadn't cheated, right? But he can't take it back, so he goes there with a new team, and he's like kind of lamenting, you know, having to deal with all that. But then, you know, his guys, they got his back, you know.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, that's in the past,
right?
And so he proves them all, like I can take these guys, like, yeah, like I didn't have to cheat because look at this.
Right.
But yeah, it's a true story.
Yeah.
We're based thereupon.
Right. I do remember seeing a Jamaican bobsled team in the real Olympics. And I guess that's become, I don't know if that was the same one it was based on or if they just have, it's become a tradition.
Well, the Jamaican bobsled is apparently at the Calgary Olympic Center, where they held the Olympics, and so they have either a replica or the very one. And Jess said that she got to actually sit in the bobsled when she was younger, and that's actually how she initially introduced herself to me, but in the introduce yourself page, she actually said, like, you know, yeah, I sat in that bobsled. It's funny. So yeah, actually, the coincidences abound with when it comes to me and Jess meeting is it's kind of there's kind of a lot of God's providence on that whole thing.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
I'll have to ask you more about that when we. I'm going to start with your where'd you come from? Like, where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Oregon. I was born in Seattle. And so we ended up going back to Washington when I was like kind of middle of high school.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, it was like I was working in Seattle towards the end of when I decided to move to here to Texas because it was a lot of there's a lot to do with like the politics and everything. Like I saw like just the rights eroding away, the perversion coming down the pipe, like. I was going to a lot of hearings. I worked for my mom has like a nonprofit, like pro-life group. And I was doing some like office stuff for her for a while. And then, I was going to different hearings at the Capitol and I noticed that, just more and more, yeah, it was just getting increasingly depraved. Like the group health, like organization that I had health insurance through for a while. They're just drug pushers. I know firsthand. Right. Yeah. They just prescribe drugs like candy. And so a lot of people just call them group death. And I no doubt now they're covering transgender surgeries, but yeah, back then it was like, we want like full stop all abortion, you know, and we want to outlaw conversion therapy. Which you wouldn't think they had any hand in, like, being a health insurance group. But no, they were very interested in making sure that you can't give the gospel to a gay person.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I do know, like, okay, so there's a ministry in Oregon called Shield of Faith. And back, like, 20-something years ago, I had several friends, because our church has some connections with this ministry. And one of the things that they would do is they would send people out on the, they would send their missionaries or trained missionaries out on the street for like 2 weeks, something like that, where no money, place to stay. It was kind of like a trust, have faith. If somebody invited you to stay at their house, that's fine. But oftentimes they would camp out behind a, I think my friends told me they slept behind a, trash dump one
dumpster.
Night. Yeah. But it's interesting because back then, although Texas is sort of catching up, but here in Texas is the kind of the Bible Belt. And usually until recently, people were, have been pretty friendly about the, about Christianity, even if they're not Christians. I mean, culturally, it's a, an acceptable thing, or was.
Yeah.
But up in Oregon, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, it was already like, if you went out and started sharing the gospel, you'd get a lot of hate.
Yeah, Jess and me have noticed this a lot because down here is very cultural. So you end up talking to a lot of people that are most assuredly lost, but they go to church. And it's just this weird thing because like, where I'm from, it's like, I didn't want to go to church, because, you know, that was kind of the dynamic there a little bit, but like Jess said that like in Canada, there's no like lost people going to church. Like, you know, you don't know that for sure, but you know what I mean? Like, like they're either hot or they're cold. You know what I mean? They're just like, I want nothing to do with the, this Christianity or, like, oh yes, I am a Christian, and like I'll gladly take your abuse at work.
You know? Yeah, I'm not sure if we're. I mean, in the cities like Dallas and Austin, Austin is probably more like California now.
Yeah,
but it's starting to turn that way in the cities in Texas. I'm sure out here in the country where you know where you are, it's probably still culturally friendly to Christianity.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to say to the podcasters, if it sounds a lot better, it's because I'm using Mike's equipment. So I'm not using my free app that I use. he's got something better. So
it's also free, but
oh, is it? I thought you said it wasn't.
Well, it says it's not free, but if you wait 5 seconds, it'll say still evaluating.
Oh, okay. And it's been longer than 5 seconds, so I guess you're okay.
Yeah, I have this philosophy about like software. Generally, if it's a good product, it should be free.
Yeah.
To like just casual users that like you know that aren't doing it commercially.
Right.
But once you start making like some money, you should probably buy it.
Invest into stuff. Yeah. I kind of, that's how I am with music. Like, as a huge Beach Boys fan, if there's songs that they never released, but they're on bootlegs, I'll get the bootlegs, or I'll, remember Napster?
Oh, yeah.
I used to find unreleased stuff on there, and I didn't feel too guilty about it, because if it came out, I would buy it.
Yeah.
Because usually it wasn't great quality anyway, but
well, so what's the difference between like listening to something like on like Napster and going into a store where they've got the CD and you could pop it in the drive with headphones on,
right?
Like, it's try before you buy, you know.
Or you can listen to Spotify for free.
Yeah, and that's
with ads. But
oh man, I wonder how Lars Ulrich feels about that, right? Now.
Yeah. So going back to your childhood, were you did you grow up in a Christian home?
Yeah, actually. So my mom and dad were like, my mom grew up Church of Christ, and my dad grew up Catholic. But then my mom and him both kind of like were like going Baptist when they got married, and then like we kind of, so the Baptist church in our area when I was growing up was actually, They started a satellite church that they just called Community Church. And I think they were more conservative if I look back on it. But they definitely were kind of like going more modern, but still having the format, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was very Baptist, and like most, like it was what you would mostly find at a like First Baptist or something like that today.
I do know like somewhere in the 90s or early 2000s, most Baptist churches before that were like choirs and hymns.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the 90s and early 2000s, even those churches started to get bands and worship bands, you know, like the more modern type of worship team.
Yeah, and I think that may have something to do with the Chuck Smith history, you know?
Yeah, and the generational thing, because like by the time the baby boomers were in charge, maybe...
I remember specifically growing up in these different churches and like noticing that there was always a split over the music.
Right.
And
early service would be hymns.
Exactly. The modern, kids go to the later service with the rock music, you know.
And there was, did you remember those, there would be those, not podcasts, but documentaries or things like that was anti-rock music.
Oh, yeah. They sold their souls for rock and roll.
That one. Yeah. Although that one seems to, I see that, I've seen that on YouTube, seems to be more focused on the lyrics than maybe the rhythm. Like, maybe not, but like,
I what I've seen, it's like all the above, and it's like they go after DC Talk and all them too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Bill Gothard was like saying certain rhythms were
evil
and stuff.
I mean, no doubt there is some history there, like Keith Richards, what's the other guy, like what's the singer, the guy, Rolling Stones?
Yeah, Keith Richards. And oh, Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger, yeah. I guess Mick Jagger specifically talked about how they wanted to like mimic the voodoo beats.
Oh, right.
The voodoo rhythms from the Haitian, like, because, you know, like, have you ever seen like the documentary The Muscle Shoals?
Mm-mm.
It's like where all the like blues players really were for recording, and like this is like the Deep South, you know, like swampland type stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just if you just think about like, man, side tangent. I remember seeing some sideshow thing. It was like, come see the man alligator hybrid. Right. You remember this?
No.
It's like a half, it's like this shriveled, like corpsey looking like man/alligator creature that they have in like a like a case, you know, and they you would like pay $5 or whatever to go look at it.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
Anyways.
Oh, and what about? Okay, I know Baptist churches back in the 80s, and they probably still do to a degree, had like revival tent meetings.
Yeah.
And did they ever have, like, one time I remember this.
That kind of goes back to the Wesleyan movement, though.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Did they ever have, like, burnings, like, where you could put, they would say, I just remember this one time where there was, like, a barrel of fire.
Oh, yeah?
And you could bring, like, your evil music or your, some occult book or something. And
oh, man. I don't remember seeing that, but I wish I had, because when I got saved, that's exactly what I did. I went outside to the dumpster. It was kind of casual, though. I just threw it in the dumpster, you know.
Right. And I don't know if that used to be more common than it is now. Like, churches really don't do that anymore. But I know John Todd talked about it, and we might get into him. But maybe. Yeah, he said that churches would do that, and people would bring their rock albums, not being told to, they would just do it. And you know, so I guess I'll just say this real quick. My dad grew up Southern Baptist and my mom was Spanish Disciples of Christ.
Oh, okay.
And
that's an interesting,
yeah. And we mostly went to Bible churches or Baptist churches, and we went to a Disciples of Christ church for a year and a half, my mom's parents' church. And that's when I first discovered there's different kinds of Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Because that denomination will have female pastors,
right?
Which Baptists don't, most of them.
I would say most conservative denominations will not touch it. Yeah.
And then I went to a charismatic school for 1 year, and they had an altar call to speak in tongues. And I went home and told them, and they were like, well, we don't agree with that. That was it. That's all. They weren't mad.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, thinking about it, they put me in a charismatic school, so they're not surprised. And
that's funny.
But it was an educational experience for me. So, like, when I got to my 20s, I was already aware of all these different, you know, denominations and doctrines, and I'm like, and people would try to give me books to convince me of their whatever. And even in my 20s, I had this mindset of, I just want to read the Bible and maybe try to hear how they get there, all these different views, whatever it is,
man. That's relatable.
Try to not filter the Bible, but try to go straight to Scripture and say, what does it really say? And constantly challenging myself to find truth. But
I mean, that's the way you do it. That's what they used to call, I guess, Socratic method. You place yourself in a position of, like, you know, you want to hear you want to hear what you don't know.
Yeah.
You want to learn. And, you know, people like so my old neighbor used to say, you know, what are they selling? Because every time you go to a specific, I guess, denomination, or like you talk to a guy that's like, he's very much like enveloped in this one track, you know?
Right.
And you can't really talk to them about anything else. They're always trying to convince you of something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, that's them trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be really benign, you know, and kind of like from a good place, but like, ultimately, like, they're not coming at it from a place of like wanting to learn things. And, like, you know, I've personally kind of tried to be more understanding, but also, you know, not necessarily like skeptical about everything. 'Cause there's things where, like, I'm certain of, right. Mm-hmm. But then there's less certain things where, you know, I'm still kind of amazed sometimes at what people can come up with, right? Because there's all these fun combinations you can have. Like, you know, you have a friend that, wanted to talk to you about, like Trinitarian doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, this whole thing because, like, well, how do you get there, right?
Right.
And it's like, well, the church taught me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what if you didn't have the church, right? Right. How do you get there from the Bible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, oh, yeah. The early church fathers, which I think is educational.
Of course.
But it's not necessarily, I mean, when Jesus rebuked the Pharisees for teaching traditions of men, I think the church has also created its own traditions.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's interesting to weed through. For example, here's one example. When I was a kid, I heard that the soul is the mind, will, and emotions.
Yeah.
But then it says...
That's total Bill Goffin.
But then it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And I'm thinking, wait a second. So the mind and the soul are listed separately, but the mind is part of the soul?
Yeah.
But it never says that in the Bible. So that's it. I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's just one of those things that... Or December 25th or whatever, like that Jesus was 33 years old. And I'm like, is that in the Bible? Not that that's important. I'm just saying I like to challenge myself to
sure.
Is that really there? And if it's there, where is it? You know? And yeah, so it sounds like we have a similar... At least an approach,
yeah. I mean,
when did you first come aware that there were different kinds of Christians? Like, was there a certain place in your childhood that you were like, became, connected to some other group? Or did your parents always tell you that?
My parents were not like hardline Baptists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of Baptists will be like closed off to anything other than their denomination, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other denominations do the same thing, you know, to divide and stuff. My parents were very like open about like, as long as it's not, you know, something outlandish or occult, right?
Yeah.
So like they wouldn't have. So I had been aware of an Assemblies of God, for example,
mm-hmm.
after I had been going to Wesleyan, like for youth group. So like I had mm-hmm. friends that wanted me to play bass. So I learned how to play bass and I played in the worship team.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Wesleyan church. And then I got hooked up with kind of like an older like he was a senior, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he played like crazy Hendrix, you know, style guitar playing and stuff. And so he ended up getting involved with basically any place that he could play guitar, right?
Right.
So one place was at one of his friend's church, the Assemblies of God. Then I really realized, oh, these guys like believe in like weird stuff that I've never heard of before, like Hamana Shamarain Medashimaramina.
Yeah.
And like, oh, this is like, I actually remember, funny enough, I just unlocked a memory of feeling like so like a feeling come over me when all that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of being kind of like, you know, it's kind of, have you seen one of those memes of like the horse goes to the Baptists going to the Pentecostal meeting, and then it's like there's this horse like rolling around in the snow, and then you know it pans over to him and he's like
right. Yeah.
But yeah, I was kind of introduced to different worlds that way. And then
yeah
so like I said, like my parents were kind of like, yeah, as long as you're going to church, that's cool.
You know? Right. Yeah.
It's better than, you know,
yeah,
other stuff that your friends and other kids like get into this mm-hmm. age, you know. Like I think I was like 13 or 14 at the time.
Yeah, it seemed like my parents were pretty obviously they sent me to a charismatic school and then a Presbyterian school later.
Yeah, which and, is like, I don't know,
yeah,
for the most part total opposite,
right? They're very intellectual, whereas charismatics are very emotional.
Yeah.
And I heard some things for the first time there, like Calvinism and preterism and infant baptism. Although I actually had heard of infant baptism, but I thought that was a Catholic thing. And the Baptist, my Baptist grandma, I'll call her, she was very like negative about Catholics and charismatics. And so that's where I first heard about infant baptism. So when I heard that there was actually a Protestant denomination that did that, I was like, oh. And I had to think about it. I'm like, you know, I didn't, even though I believe in immersion, but like I was kind of like, well, I talked to them and they don't believe it saves a baby, but they,
right.
They
fundamentally, it's different for why they do it. Yeah.
So I think in Catholic churches, they believe it saves them.
Well, so, and this ties into what I know a lot about Catholicism, mostly because, later on, my parents, when we moved back to Washington, my mom actually was kind of like brought into Catholicism through like people at her pro-life office that was in Oregon, and they kind of like got her to like pray rosaries and stuff, and then she kind of just wanting to be more Catholic. We couldn't really find a good church in our area that we moved to, and so like she just decided to try the Catholic Church, you know. And so eventually she went through the confirmation, all that stuff, and you know, my dad too, and like he slept through most of it, but you know, as long as you say the words at the end, it's all good. They were basically like, if I fast forward more, like I was kind of really upset about that, because that was a shock to me. I was like, this is the most like opposite, like this is totally not what I want to do, is go to this boring, solemn, thing where we got to stand up, sit down, you know,
right.
And then you got to cross your arms when everybody goes up and gets the snack, you know, so when I got saved, I actually like wanted to investigate, because my mom was like, oh, well, you're a Christian now, you should go to the Catholic Church.
Oh.
And I was like, something just automatically doesn't sit right with this still. And I don't know what it is. So I looked into it and watched YouTube videos and slowly found out about the doctrine, you know, mostly.
But how old were you at the time?
That was when I was 23 or 24. Yeah. But yes, yeah. So like when they converted, it was I was like 15, 16. And so it was kind of like, that was kind of like me rebelling after that point. Mm-hmm. Like I totally just like, if you ask, depending on who you were, I wouldn't say I was a Christian.
Yeah.
But if I really needed to be good with like one of my friends, you know, parents, like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah.
Right.
I went to church and all that stuff. But
high church has never felt right to me. Like it feels unreligious, I don't mind it like on special occasions, like a Christmas concert or something. There's it's kind of special that way, but if it's every Sunday, it just feels, my word for religion is, my dad told me when I was a kid, he said, I'm not religious, I'm in a relationship.
And it's funny, that's now like the slogan of like it's the billboard on all the churches.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's ahead of his time.
Right. There was one thing though that they got upset about with the Southern Baptist Church. My mom wanted to teach Sunday school or something, and they said she had to get baptized again because she
to
grew
teach
up
Sunday
in
school?
Disciples of Christ. Yeah.
Huh.
Like, it would have made sense to me if they tested her theology or something, but like to make her get baptized again.
Well, you know, Baptists are the name Baptist, right?
Yeah.
Actually, it comes from like Anabaptist tradition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So back in like, not Geneva, Zurich. Mm-hmm. You've heard of Ulrich Zwingli?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so he was one of the Swiss reformers.
Yeah.
Right after Martin Luther, he somehow was kind of like I think they were like companions in theology and stuff. And then so he's basically like out there with these other people. He gets a lot of people like converted away from either converted from Catholicism or like you know. He gets these people, these fresh converts, basically. And so they end up going, from his perspective, too far, you know? And so he didn't want to, like, get rid of a lot of the Catholic doctrines, like the infant baptism, because for them, that was their introduction into civil, like, that was their birth certificate, is getting baptized as a baby. So if you don't have that, like, you know,
right,
then hey, you're kind of like messing stuff up, at least civilly. So he what he would do is, and there's probably way more history to this, but he's famous for giving the Anabaptists their third baptism, mm-hmm, because they would rebaptize. Like, no, you were baptized as a baby. You don't need to be baptized again, right? After conversion. Mm-hmm. And so they got baptized again. And he was like, all right, you want to be baptized again? I'll dunk you in this water and you'll stay down there and you'll drown. Yeah.
Wow.
So he, yeah, that guy was nuts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, you know, the, what I know about the, like, the Catholic Church and their, like, their doctrine about baptism, mm-hmm, is, so this, basically this comes from the problem of original sin. Mm-hmm. So because you have original sin, it's not just that you have, oh, hey.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
If you want to join us whenever.
You just need to pull up a chair.
We're just talking.
Maybe this one.
Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Is he a man? The scary gods demand sacrifice. They need blood. They need blood. The neighbor becomes betrayed. We want blood. We want blood. Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? Is he a lamb?
So the problem of original sin, it's not that, like, you know, you and me understand, having talked about it before, I'm sure,
yeah,
that, like, you have Adam's sin, right? By yeah, one man, death entered, you know, and by one
yeah,
man's sin, right, entered in the world. And so you're born unto Adam, mm-hmm, and you need to be born again unto Christ, you know?
Right.
So the second Adam.
Yeah.
So this is all very important. So we're... Yeah. So the thing is, at a certain point, they need the Marian dogmas, mm-hmm, and so she's free of original sin, mm-hmm, and so it's not that, like, you have this sin, this proclivity to sin, like, you will sin because it's in your nature, it's fallen.
Mm-hmm.
It goes beyond that. It's like you are placed a charge of sin because of Adam, mm-hmm, like so. hypothetically, if you were able to come to a an age of accountability,
right,
and not sin and then die, like technically you would be without sin.
Yeah.
Even though you had the nature to, and so like it's impossible to not. So
right.
Like children, you know, they need to be saved, right?
Yeah.
So they go beyond this, though. It's like that charge that Adam did, that Adam was guilty of, like you're also guilty of it just by like extension of Adam.
Right.
So you're just like, it goes beyond being born in sin. It's born, like, so you are, yeah, as
you're
a
guilty,
as a undeveloped, right, child in your mother's womb.
Yeah.
You are basically hellbound,
right,
before even breathing.
That's a Catholic doctrine.
Yeah. And yeah, so by the grace of God, he will save them. This is
it's a Calvinist doctrine as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And this is all in like, yeah, the catechism.
And I've been thinking about, because I was listening to a Leighton Flowers versus James White,
yeah,
debate.
I haven't listened to this yet.
And it's provisionist versus Calvinist, but
Can I just say I think Leighton Flowers might be like the most like I don't know what he's the guy that gets the most airplay, and I don't know, right, why.
Right. He's not the best.
Because he's not very good.
Right. Yeah. But basically he doesn't necessarily, well, he believes that I think he believes that we inherit the nature of sin from Adam.
Yes.
But not necessarily the guilt of sin until whatever the age of accountability is. So, you know, and I'm starting, yeah, to lean that way, because yeah, Jesus talked about, unless you have the heart of one of these, a child, you know, and theirs is the kingdom of heaven and things like that. So it seems to make more sense that they're not like a baby's not going to be held accountable for something.
Well, I'll do you one, know, better. You know, yeah, you know, David, when you know, he has the child with Bathsheba.
Right.
So he's fasting and he's praying, God, don't take my son, you know? Mm-hmm. Like let him be born, he was born, I think, and he was sick. So God told him that, you know, because of his sin, he would not live.
Right.
And so he gets up and he goes and eats, and the servants ask him like the child is dead now, you eat,
mm-hmm,
like you should be mourning now. And so he basically says kind of like, you know, he can no longer come back to me.
Right.
But I will go to him, you know,
yeah,
is the exact word. So like he assumed that wherever his son was going, even though he was a baby,
mm-hmm,
he was going to go to that same place.
Yeah.
Whether or not that was, you know, heaven, yeah, or like a different compartment of, you know,
right,
the heart of the earth, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but like, so like the original sin thing, this, I swear it all goes back to them wanting to make Mary sinless, because
right,
she is born without original sin. And so
a virgin of a virgin of a virgin of somehow.
Well, I don't know where it begins with her, right, is what I know that they believe. It doesn't make sense, because there would necessitate like all the way back to somebody without sin,
mm-hmm,
is who she would be born of, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why it's kind of like, do the Catholics have a quadrinity? You know, because
well, don't they believe that the sin passes through the male, or, you know, I've heard that somewhere. Is that a Catholic doctrine where they believe that sin passes through the male seed?
Oh, I have no idea.
And so it had to be of a virgin so that Jesus didn't inherit the sin of Adam or something.
There, you can speculate that, I guess. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, I don't see that in the Bible. I just heard that as some doctrine.
Well, I know it's necessary that she was a virgin because of the prophecy in Isaiah.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, like so what they believe about baptism, though, specifically, is that it removes original sin.
Yeah.
So you have Constantine, you know, he goes his whole life without being baptized,
mm-hmm,
and then on his deathbed he gets sprinkled, because at that time, that you can definitely tell, like, the doctrine developed to the point where he believed that he was good, Like, mm-hmm. he was basically, like, sainted because he died right after he got sprinkled. So he couldn't have committed any, like, crazy sins, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he almost, like, did indulgences before it was cool, you know?
Right. So one of the things I've learned in terms of doctrine is, I'll use the word presuppositional. That's usually used with apologetics, which I never understood presuppositional apologetics. But
that's what I subscribe to, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
I like answering questions, but like not in the purpose of like, now they'll believe.
But in terms of presuppositional doctrine, it's where you read your doctrine into the text. So,
I'm sorry. I was thinking of presuppositional apologetics.
Yeah, well, there's that. Presuppositional apologetics, which I don't understand, but I know a lot of people subscribe to it. But presuppositional doctrine is where you read a verse and you insert your thoughts into it, which it may not be there. So, like, for example, the debate was John 6:44. And it says, no one can come to the Son unless the Father draws him.
Yeah.
And both sides have to insert their presupposition into the text. So, like, the Calvinist would say, the Father draws just the elect, and that drawing causes or is effectual for them to come to the Son.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other side would say, the Father draws all, and that drawing enables them to come to the Son. But in both cases, they're inserting their own thoughts into the text. And so that's just one example of like how many doctrines are somewhat...
traditional.
Yeah, your thoughts are inserted into a verse or a passage, and it doesn't necessarily say that.
Well, yeah. But, so the way you build, so it's method. There's a methodology.
Yeah.
For any viewpoint that you would like, you don't have a specific like. Well, that's clear, right?
Right.
It's not like in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. We know that because of that. Like, hey, Jesus was in the beginning with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's clear. So you can't. Unless you're dealing with somebody that doesn't believe in Scripture, like a Gnostic type, like they're gonna say, "Well, no, Jesus was like, you know, like born a man and then ascended to Godhood or something." Like this can't be derived from the text. Like that has to be ignored because it's so clear. But yeah, any time that it's like not so clear, like you have to come to the text with a methodology at some point. And that's where, like, you know, you can maybe, like, end up studying too much. And, like, and the worst thing, I guess, my father-in-law says, the worst thing you can do is write a book. Because then you're stuck.
Oh, yeah.
You're stuck on it.
Then you have to, like, if 10 years later you're like, oh, I was wrong about that.
Oh, yeah. You gotta edit it.
But...
You gotta eat crow.
Right. I think I typed out a few chapters without like any kind of editing, but I never finished.
Well, I think it's actually great to write just for your own sake. Like if you just imagine, actually one of my friends, he's training to be a pastor, you know? Mm-hmm. I was talking about like, you know, the burden he placed on himself to like say everything so accurately. And it's like, you know, I get it because when I was like, you know, writing down stuff, I too was just like, hold on, that thing that I was just going to write, do I really know that? And right. So the whole time you're just like reevaluating and like, okay, what's the opposite side of this? You know, are there other views to this?
What are the resources and digging into the resources and then finding out if those are true? Yeah. That's one of the things like, that I question whenever there's some new conspiracy that has no historical, it's like a brand new thing, you know, like for example, the mud flood and the recent full preterist mud flood thing.
I don't know if that's full preterist. That's like
some of them are,
that's
like,
basically, it's post-millennial, but it's literal.
Yeah, we're in the time, the little season of Satan or something, but yeah. It's like, they have to basically say it's all been hidden from us. We can never know real history and all this. Like, to me, that's far fetched when you can't like, when you can't, you know, actually, what's the word? Document something. I mean, it just seems a little odd, but. I mean, I do believe they try to hide stuff in history from us, but I think you can find it if you look.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of evidences that, like, you would have to discount. I think there's something to the idea that maybe, like, the dates and ages of things have been, like, expanded beyond what's reasonable, because it's all based on scholarship that's based on scholarship that goes back to the 1800s.
Yeah,
and like at the same time, you've got Darwin, you've got Hegel, and you've got these different like philosophers. The higher criticism, the lower criticism. You know, it's mm-hmm. where like we basically started getting away from like Europe started getting away from a like we believe that the Bible is true in what it says historically and about Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. and the text itself, like, is it reliable, you know. So that's where all those things started to get questioned. And then you've got Darwin comes in the scene.
Right.
You know, and it's like the same school in Frankfurt, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the same people come from the same place.
Right.
And it just goes out and it spreads this like new false paradigm. Yeah.
I'm also aware that like if there's a war, the side that wins the war tends to write history.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
But you can kind of find the truth if you look at writings from the other side before
the war
took place and get more of their side of things. And
yeah, I mean, to this day, like I still think about what people in the future will say about 2020.
Right.
What happened with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Right.
And they'll have to rely on mainstream books.
Right.
Because, you know, imagine a world where they could totally get rid of, censor everything that's not mainstream.
Right.
Like that's kind of, now is kind of, it's hard to imagine because we've got podcasts and, you know, different, like, blogs and stuff, you know.
Right.
Like, it's kind of hard to scrub the entire internet unless they, you know, do something about that, but.
Exactly.
But, yeah. Hey, actually, do you want to take a break?
Sure.
Yeah, cool. We'll be right back.
And is that loud enough? Are you close enough? Okay.
I think so.
I don't know. I can't hear myself.
We'll probably.
Yeah, you're good. You're
good. We'll hear you.
Okay.
Okay. So let's first start. Where are you from?
I am from Canada, Alberta. Uh-huh.
Yes. And you met Mike through the Canary Cry. I met Mike through Canary Cry and you through Canary Cry.
Yes.
And that's where y'all met, right?
Yeah, I gave the brief, like, intermezzo about that. It was like, yeah, I mentioned that you said hi to me in the introduce yourself thread, and you at some point were like, I actually sat in the bobsled of Cool Runnings, you know, the Jamaican bobsled.
Yes, the Jamaican bobsled.
And then I had mentioned that there was some providential aspects of our marriage that... it's kind of a super duper long story. There's too many details, but but we can share some deets.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a, is there that many details?
I mean, it was like 2 years of just agony and terror of the beast system and. Oh, yeah. FEMA camps, and yeah.
So you all were talking about that stuff with each other?
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into the conspiracy stuff in a minute, but you met through that. And now, when I first came on, and I think the first Zoom meeting I went on, both of y'all were on there.
Oh, really?
I think that was either...
She was on, like, the third Zoom call.
Okay.
I was on, like, the first two also.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was mostly just, like... like, you know, some of the original people,
mm-hmm.
and then Jess came in, and I think, yeah, you came in also.
So that was right when y'all first, so I met y'all right when y'all first met each other, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I guess you had been texting.
Yeah, texting avatars.
On the message board.
Yeah, but we were, you know, we were just friends.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't, I of course, you know, saw that her thing said she was in Canada. So, like, marriage was the furthest thing in my mind about, like, the possibilities. I knew that she would be one of the good pen pal people that the forum offers to this day, you know?
Mm. And I heard that your area of Canada is like the Texas of Canada, like, yes, the conservative state, Alberta or whatever.
Yes, yeah. Alberta, it's got the oil, it's got the cows.
The stampede.
The rodeos,
Canadian
cowboys.
Country music.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
What is? Do they have Canadian country music?
They have Nickelback.
All I know is like Nickelback, but I don't know any songs.
Look at this giraffe.
And Drake.
Yes, Drake.
Mm-hmm. He's like the gangsta of Canada.
But we try not to talk about Drake. We're a little bit ashamed.
Embarrassed.
Yeah, you know, there's some that we like. We like Michael Bublé, Justin Bieber, you know, we can take or leave. We like...
Leave it to the beef.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, isn't he like the one that... auto-tune raps or something, or that's a very popular thing these days, which I can't stand.
They all do it. Rap.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so...
Yeah.
Rap was really manly in the 90s. Now it's really gay.
You know? For a lack of a better term.
Unmanly.
It's LGBTQ+.
Yeah. Which is why I support Destiny Lab.
And you should, too.
Yeah. Although he's not my favorite style of rapper, but I like his lyrics.
Yeah. Well, you were saying that
I wasn't saying
you
anything.
Weren't saying nothing. No. Rob wanted to ask you, what was your upbringing like?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I was raised in a Christian home, homeschooled, and up until, like, grade 8. So, very sheltered. We went to this, cute little Mennonite church that was, like, a couple blocks away from where I lived. Now, not the Mennonite, like, where the dress and the head coverings. It was, like, a Mennonite church that had actually split from the, like, primitive Mennonite church that was, like, in the community. And, that's mine. That's mine.
Oops.
and, it was a really good church. There, I don't know where I was going with that. Good church. Pretty solid people that went there. But...
You have early memories of just, like, being in your Bible and...
So, like, my mom, when we were homeschooled, like, every morning we would start with, like, we'd read a chapter of the Bible every day, and then we'd go on and read, like... We had a variety of different books that we read through, like, chapter books. So there was, like, some... These, like, trailblazer books, which were, like, they were, like, about certain, like, people in history. So, I guess to give an example, I'm trying to think of a good one. Tyndale?
Yeah.
I remember, like, Tyndale being, like, one of the characters, and then, like, the book was, like, a fiction story based on, like, like... Tyndale with like he would be like a character in the book. And I just remember like reading those books and just being fascinated by like
it's like some Davy Crockett lore.
I just like so I don't really have like a specific moment in my life that I remember, like, getting saved. Mm-hmm. I just always felt like I was, like, Jesus's best friend. And it wasn't really until high school where like, it actually started becoming my own, like, I rather than me believing just because my family did and my parents did, in high school, I think, would probably be, like, where I'd mark the point of, like, really pursuing God for myself. And
you mentioned that there's, like, there's this time where it was, like, all of a sudden, you just can't stop, like, if you, like, see somebody that, like, looks like they need Jesus, you like, that they would be, you'd go up and, like, talk to them about Jesus, and then...
Yeah, yeah, so I guess I went to this conference when I was in high school, and I remember, like, at that point in my life, I was sort of, like, just grumpy and, like, depressed about...
Well, that's every high schooler.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, I was grumpy and depressed about, like, life in general. I maybe just mad about nothing. And, you know, like, when you have, like, no reason to be mad, but you're just mad anyways? That's kind of how I was. And I remember just praying, like, Jesus, I know you're real, but I want you to be, like, real to me, like, personal. Like, I want to know you, not feel like there's like this distant, like, you're the man in the sky type of thing. And I remember, like, just having this, like, strange, like, sensation where I just started, my hands started shaking, and I was like, what is this? And after that, I just, like, I was so excited. I was like, yeah, Jesus is real. Like, I just wanted to talk about Jesus and the Bible all the time. And so, like, if I heard, like, a conversation, people were talking about, like, something scriptural, or they were talking about Jesus, I had to be a part of that conversation. And like, this weird thing would happen to me, like, and my knee would just shake because I was just, like, so excited, and I couldn't really contain it. And I remember, like, it was to the point where I would be at work. At the time, I worked at this, like, retirement home, and I'd be, like, talking to everyone that I worked with about like, God, and, like, I'd be, like, taking the elderly people their dinner trays, and I'd be like, can I pray for you? And they were always, like, really welcoming, because, like, it's the older generation. Yep. More of them were Christians.
Yeah.
And I remember, too, like, in high school was when I actually started going to public school. Mm-hmm. And I did not care to be a part of, like, the popular, like, cliquey, like, all the high school stuff.
You got sorted into a particular crowd.
I did not get sorted into any particular crowd. I actually, like, was a loner. But I would just go to the cafeteria every day.
With the other loners.
And I had, like, one other, like, friend from church, and her and I would sit together, and we just felt bad, so we'd invite all, like, the people that were, like, sitting by themselves in the cafeteria to sit with us. And then by the end of the year, I remember we just, like, had this huge table of, like, misfits.
It was like, you were like Deb in Napoleon Dynamite.
But, you know, like, I don't even remember, like, being really friends with any of the people that I sat with at lunch, but I do have some, like, connections with some of those people, and, like, they've reached out to me, like, hey, you were really nice to me in high school. Not many people were. And I just, you know, like, I think that was just the biggest thing when I became a Christian. I just wanted to share the joy that I found just knowing Jesus for myself.
Yeah.
And one of the ways was just inviting the loners to sit with me at school.
I think I always had that, like, heart for outsiders. Like, I really had no desire to be, like, a cool, popular person. Mm-hmm. And I even remember my cousin, who was popular. I mean, I went to a tiny school, so it wasn't like... but, like, he told me, if you were more outgoing, Rob, you could be really popular. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know. I just had this idea of, I don't want to be something I'm not just to be popular. I mean, I'll be friends with them, whatever. Yeah, but, like, I also had a tendency to, like, if I see somebody that's kind of like an outsider, I would befriend them. And I remember there was a time where a group of us were going to go to Deep Ellum or something, and there was this one girl who's kind of like not part of the cool crowd, and the other people were like, why are you going, and do you have permission from your mom, and like all this stuff, and like,
well, nowadays I'd ask that question.
Yeah. And I was the one that had a driver's license, I think. There was a group of us going somewhere, and I said, look, if she can't go, I'm not going. Basically, you know, not just kind of like standing up for, and I've done that a few times. I did that a few times, but like, I was kind of surprised that there's like Christians that act stuck up and stuff like that, like, in youth group and everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know if you, like, in church groups that you were in, Jessica, was there, like, cliques even in churches, or, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly...
People are people.
Yeah.
Yeah, in crowd and the nerds and all that.
It's I mean, I even found, like, some of the pastors that I knew were cliquey. So, and they'd have their, like, favorites. But...
Yeah.
Meh.
I think I always, I wasn't necessarily a nerd, but I wasn't, like, trying to be cool. Like, I didn't care about style. I would just, like, you know, I don't know.
Dude, I had a picture taken, like, a family picture at the Catholic Church with my parents, and I had, like, this, like, horrible-looking, like... It looked like a pirate shirt, like a white, like, kind of like...
This pirate trend that she's come up with, Jerry, this is going to be the new look for the 90s. You're going to be the first pirate.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
Exactly.
Have you seen the Seinfeld?
It was almost like... So it wasn't like puffy on the front. Exactly. It wasn't like a puffy shirt thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just this horrible looking shirt with like tons of like... big letters and like cross like stuff, and like it looked like a full body like UFC tattoo. And it was horrible. I had like this hair down to my shoulders. The Mexican afro.
Yeah.
Oh man, good times.
This is the most awesomest podcast of all time. I'm your host, Rob Hendrick. This podcast is brought to you by Proverbs 16:18. Ride going for instructions.